You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krumrie. Thanks for tuning in. Cancer patients in Juneau who need a gynecological surgery no longer have to leave town to get it. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, providers hope it will make life-saving procedures more accessible.
When Suzanne Lukin learned she had cancer, it came as a surprise.
There was no pain. There was nothing at all. No indication. I was tired, but, you know, I'm 77.
She'd gone to the doctor after other symptoms appeared.
I thought I had a kidney infection because I started to pass blood. So I went to the walk-in, search walk-in over in Vintage Park, and they said, no, that's not what you think.
Instead, Lukin was diagnosed with uterine cancer.
The first thing that hits you when they say it's cancer, immediately you think of people you know that have had devastating experiences, you know, and you're thinking, oh my gosh.
Similar thoughts came up when she learned she needed to have a hysterectomy, a surgery to remove the uterus.
I can remember back, you know, my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, all of my family members had had hysterectomies. I feel very fortunate that the terror of what I'd seen with them did not overcome me.
For her family members, hysterectomies had required a large incision in the abdomen and several weeks of recovery. Today, they can usually be done with minimally invasive techniques, if a hospital has the right equipment and the right doctors. And now, Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital does. Doctors from Alaska Women's Cancer Care are flying down from Anchorage twice a month to meet with and operate on gynecologic cancer patients. Lukin became their first surgery patient in Juneau. The procedure was done with the Da Vinci Xi surgical system, a robotic system Bartlett got last year.
That was when we were in a position to be able to really bring the same level of care here to town that we were providing in Anchorage.
Dr. Melissa Hardesty is a gynecological oncologist and one of the co-owners of Alaska Women's Cancer Care. She says the Da Vinci Xi system allows for more precise movement for surgeons.
The instrument has a wrist, and that allows us to do much more complicated motion. It would just be like, imagine the things you can do in life if you had wrist splints on both of your wrists or not.
It also means smaller incisions and an easier recovery for many patients. That was the case for Lukin.
There's four teensy tiny scars, that's all. I mean, it's amazing. It truly is amazing.
Hardesty and Dr. Joni Hope usually travel to Juneau on Wednesday night, see patients on Thursday, and do surgeries on Friday. Hardesty says their consistent schedule means Juneau-based patients have more time to sit with the surgery recommendation and think about their options.
In the Anchorage model, we really tried to have it be a turnaround. Like, I'm going to see you, I'm going to operate on you the next day. That's a lot for people. Why did we do it that way? Because it's expensive. People don't want to make two flights. Well, if we're here and it needs to be, like, less hurried, it can be. I can see you. We can do surgery in a couple weeks when the next person is up here. You know, if it's just people need time to think about what they want to do or what's right for them or, you know, all of that, it's just going to be a lot, you know, just a better pace for people.
It was a better pace for Lukin. If she'd had to go to Anchorage, she says, she may have put it off.
I think I would have been a lot more upset had I had to go to Anchorage, get a hotel, get a car, get somebody to stay with me, you know, and then you're there for a week. How many people can afford to take a vacation, so to speak, with hotels and plane fare and everything else to go for health reasons?
Instead, after surgery, she got to go home and fall asleep in her own bed.
I think it's important that women realize, hey, we now can go through a surgery that we need with no problems. And we can do it right here in our own home. Well, hometown, I should say. You know, and feel comfortable about it. It's not the big, scary thing that it used to be.
She hopes other women will see how important and now how accessible this kind of treatment can be. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
The Alaska House of Representatives passed its $6 billion operating budget today. That's a spending plan for day-to-day government operations beginning next June. Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove spoke with Alaska Public Media's Capitol reporter Eric Stone.
So what is in this budget? So for that, let's first hear from Representative Delina Johnson. She's a Palmer Republican and the House's operating budget chair.
This budget prioritizes public safety, education, a strong permanent fund dividend, essential services to Alaskans, and provides support to Alaska's most vulnerable populations.
Some of the highlights are $175 million in one-time funding for public schools, which is equivalent to a $680 per student increase, and another $44 million for school bond debt reimbursement. There are 10 new village public safety officers, more attorneys in the Department of Law, and $90 million in community assistance, among many other things. There are lots of priorities from the mostly Democratic and independent minority in there, too. A couple of note, there's an amendment from Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez adding $5 million each to statewide seafood and tourism marketing programs. And another from Juneau Democrat Andy Story adds about $9 million to help with reading programs for young students. Johnson says nobody's totally satisfied, and that's what makes it a good compromise.
Each person here gave a little, and each person got a little. That's what this budget represents, Madam Speaker.
And one of those compromises is the permanent fund dividend.
Yeah, always a topic of interest. So what's the PFD looking like?
So at this point, the House is sticking with about $2,300. That's the amount set by the Finance Committee. There were a few attempts to change that on the floor, but none of them wound up sticking. Johnson says the budget as written has a surplus of nearly $80 million, and Representative Jamie Allard, an Eagle River Republican, says it's an attempt to pay the biggest possible dividend without jeopardizing future payouts.
No, it's not a full PFD, but I want the community and the state constituents to recognize that it is the third largest. We're doing the best that we can. And in order to make that PFD and the dividend for the long duration of the time, we have to be very careful and wise to what we're doing.
But not everybody agrees that the state can afford it. Members of the House minority, mostly Democrats and independents, they say the budget's artificially low and doesn't account for lots of stuff that will eventually need to be rolled into the budget, like more than $500 million in capital projects that the House and Senate have agreed to spend. Representative Cliff Groh, an Anchorage Democrat, put it this way.
This budget is based on fantasy, and it does not set us up for success either in the next few years or across generations.
He says new revenues could help with that, and minority members also pointed to some other things that they saw as missing pieces.
Oh yeah, what sort of things?
One of the missing pieces we've heard a lot about is the rising cost of energy. Here's Representative Maxine Dybert, a Democrat from Fairbanks.
I can't in good conscience send a budget over to the other body without addressing energy.
One specific item is funding for electrical transmission line upgrades that could make energy more affordable, especially in the interior. The state got a giant federal grant for that, and it requires more than $200 million in matching state funds over several years. But members of the Republican-led majority say there's another place for that. Here's Representative Will Stapp. He's a Republican from Fairbanks.
Energy is certainly the number one problem facing the interior. It is, however, a problem that can best be solved through the budget and the capital budget, Madam Speaker, not the operating budget.
And the Senate rolled out its draft of the capital budget today. They'll work through amendments in the coming days and pass it over to the House.
All right, Eric, so where do things go from here?
Well, pretty soon the Senate will take its crack at the operating budget, and they are pretty skeptical that the budget is in fact balanced. The Senate's operating budget chair, Sitka Republican Bert Stedman, sounded a lot like what we've heard from the Democrats and independents in the House. He's been beating this drum all session, asking folks to look at what's not in the budget, and he says with capital projects, bills that have passed, and everything else, it's not balanced.
So by the time you add that all in, they're underwater somewhere around $276 million. So that's a lot of gaposes to deal with in the conference committee, and we have to get the ends to meet.
And that was before amendments added a little under $20 million to the budget. Stedman has been pretty consistent that the dividend should be a quarter of the state's annual draw from the permanent fund, and this year that would come out to about $1,600 a person. For now, though, we are on track to avoid a government shutdown. This week was the agreed-upon deadline for the operating budget to pass, and it did, but it remains to be seen whether it'll stay on track.
Okay, that was Alaska Public Media's Capitol reporter Eric Stone. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And this week is the 49th Annual Alaska Folk Festival. And here's a little clip from last night.
We stand waiting at the edges of your fields. We stand just waiting for the tide. When the plow's bright blade will turn to rust, and the earth will heal from the vicious cut.
This is the new single Trees from Lori Lewis and the Right Hands, the featured guest artist of Alaska Folk Festival this week. Lewis played last night and will play again as the headliner on the closing night of the festival this Sunday. This is KTOO.